On this week's episode of Video Culture, we'll talk the magical movie summer of 1984.
Did you rewind it?
I don't know.
In a time where everyone has a podcast, in a place where everyone has an opinion, two heroes, Matthew and Ryan, against all odds, are here to save your movie viewing experience from total disaster. Your trip through the video aisles of yesteryear begins now. There will be chills. There will be thrills. And there's a good chance that Ryan will have a coffee spill. They'll discuss the quality, cultural significance, and more detail, frankly, than you bargained for. Here's your host, Ryan Acree and Matthew Essery.
And welcome once again to another fantastic episode of Video Culture. This is the first episode in Season 2. I'm Ryan Acree.
And I'm Matthew Essery.
And we are beginning this season of 2020.
For those who said it wouldn't last, which really was just me, I think. We proved me wrong, Ryan. We proved me wrong.
Did you have doubt in Sparkle Motion?
I lacked commitment in Sparkle Motion, yeah. For you Donnie Darko fans out there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so season two, man, 2020.
Man, we have kept it up. We've watched 50 movies so far.
So many movies.
Yeah. And plus a couple just for fun, you know, yeah. Just because we're like, oh, wow, this movie leads into this movie and this is kind of cool. Yeah. So it's been more than 50, but 50 yeah. that we've talked about on yeah. the show.
But we covered that a lot last time. We don't want to get too into our season finale episode, which if you haven't heard yet, is up on the website. Highly recommend checking it out.
It's good stuff. It's kind of a – so if you don't maybe you feel like, oh, these are a lot of great movies – you know, feel free to go back to season one. The last episode is kind of a retrospective, so feel free to check that out.
It's where I admit my undying love for Ryan. That was our climax.
Oh my
god, that was the resolution for our three act arc.
All right, so let's talk about what we're going to talk about in this show. Moving on. Let me explain like how this started. So you heard from the intro that it's the magical movie summer of 1984, and how I sort of came up with the idea, really. And it all came from, you know, a lot of people on Twitter and social media. They will say, you know, like, you know, 30 years ago or 25 years ago, this movie was released, or this, you know, album came out or something like that. And somebody put that, You know, the Never Ending Story, you know, came out this week. And then like the week before was like The Last Starfighter came out this week. And I was like, you know, it was in the middle of July, and I'm going, I know these were summer movies. And then they just kept coming. And then it spurred me to start looking up like, wait a second, like all these movies were in the middle of this one summer.
Yes.
And looking back, like I even nailed it down to like one particular week of 1984. And then even when I started doing research and I started thinking like, oh my gosh, like am I the only person that thinks this? And it's really not. And matter of fact, I found a article that was written in 2014 from the website Gizmodo that was written by Alyssa Walker that says, was 1984 the best year ever for summer movies?
And if you look at the list, it's pretty hard to disagree with that thought.
So, I mean, I've already mentioned two movies. Let's just go through the list that came out or that were in the box office from the week of July 20th through 26th, 1984. And this data is from boxofficemojo.com. And the number one movie that week was Ghostbusters.
Doesn't get much bigger than Ghostbusters.
I mean, that is a huge movie, huge franchise. I mean, it is a household name.
If you think about it, it's really the movie that's responsible for a good chunk of why we do this show. I mean, a lot of our little movies came from loving Ghostbusters as children.
Now, remember, what we're talking about is not movie video rentals.
Yeah.
We're actually talking about, you know, going to the theater.
We are, yeah.
You know, paying for it. So, shall I just go through the list really quick?
Sure.
All right, so we'll go through the list and then we'll talk about the movies. So number one, I said Ghostbusters. Number two was really surprising because it was a new movie that just came out called Best Defense, starring Dudley Moore and Eddie Murphy.
Which is a movie I had never heard of. I saw that on the list and I was like, what the heck is that?
Well, it was still, what happened was it was following Eddie Murphy's still success from Delirious,
yeah.
But it was before Beverly Hills Cop came out later in 1984 in December. So, but this came out in summer.
It's a movie I had never heard of when I saw this list. And I mean, now I'm definitely going to check it out because I'm definitely curious about it.
All right. But
trust me,
that is kind of the exception, not the norm of the rest of the movies on this list.
Yes,
all right?
This is not going to be an hour devoted to the oeuvre of Dudley Moore.
Right. Yeah. No. Gremlins, The Karate Kid, The Neverending Story, The Muppets Take Manhattan, The Last Starfighter, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Bachelor Party, Revenge of the Nerds, Conan the Destroyer, Cannonball Run 2, Star Trek 3, The Search for Spock, and another movie I'd not heard of, Electric Dreams.
Which, honestly, except for those two, except for like, Electric Dreams and Best Defense.
Right. And that's 14 movies.
Yeah, that's a lot of 80s kids' childhoods right there.
Huge.
Yeah. I mean, that's a huge swath of, I know, a lot of our listeners' childhood or teenage years.
I mean, a lot of these movies are part of our normal everyday, like, movie culture.
Yes.
These are not, like, culture.
Yeah.
This is part of the movie culture, part of the entertainment culture, part of the American culture.
Yeah. You mentioned Gremlins. Everyone knows what you're talking about. You mentioned, yeah. you know, The Search for Spock. People know what you're talking about.
You yeah. say wax on, wax off.
They know what you're talking
right.
about.
Or yeah. sweep the leg or, you know, anything. Sure. The Neverending Story.
Everyone gets upset about that silly horse dying.
Which was only brought in for that one scene.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that for a second. Let's let that be our first tangent.
All right.
That scene always wrecked me as a kid.
It wrecked a lot of
you
kids.
Know, our Treyu is bringing his horse through the Swamp of Sadness.
Yeah.
Horse name is Artex.
Yeah.
Things into the swamp. He can't get it to come out. Horses are drowning in the swamp. You cry. It's sad. It's a pretty well-acted scene. I watched it as an adult, and I never realized this. Like you said, that horse does not exist in any other earlier part of the movie.
But
he literally is brought in to make children sad in that moment.
Well, I thought about this a lot, right? Yeah. I thought about why did this happen? Like, and I think two reasons. I think the same thing of why you have movies with, you know, the guys in Star Trek that wear the blue shirts.
The red shirts,
and then like, oh, they're going to die.
Yeah.
So these are characters that you're not really, I mean, those characters weren't, you know, they didn't have any, we didn't know them before, but all of a sudden it shot a crew member.
Yeah.
And the same thing happens here is like you bringing something and you hear about in the movie, The Neverending Story, you hear about the nothing. But you don't really know what it is, and that nothing like brought it to life. It demonstrated like its power and that it's coming and it's right there nipping at the character's heels, you know.
But as an adult, it just struck me as so funny how manipulative it was.
It is very manipulative.
Yeah, and it's so obvious. And it just completely reframed how I saw it as a kid. And it just, I don't know, it's really amused me to think that that horse does not exist up until the scene where it dies dramatically.
Yeah. Let's go off on another tangent. I'll tell a little personal story. And this we didn't talk about before, but and maybe I've told you this, but The Neverending Story, I mean, these are movies that we saw like very early on in the movie theater. Like our experiences, this really sort of sets the idea of, you know, the movie theater and what the movies, like, you know, mean to us, basically. And this is one of the reasons that we still love movies to this day, really.
Sure.
But how I saw the Neverending Story is that when I was in daycare, right, when my parents, like, worked, they all took all of us to go see the Neverending Story. So they all
the intense
got
intense movie.
But yeah, it is an intense movie for kids because you do have this thing. Now, it wasn't like what was the Jim Henson
Dark,
like,
Crystal?
Yeah, it wasn't like the Dark Crystal. Okay, I mean, yeah, they are really similar, but it doesn't have as much dark overtones, I think, as the Dark, yeah, Crystal. Now, so when we go to see this movie, you know, they shovel us into the theater. They were so worried about, like, getting us all in and getting us, make sure that we could all sit as a group because, yeah, you know, there's no assigned seating in 1984. Yeah. So we all got in like 30 minutes before the movie started because, you know, whatever. And we just had to sit there and sit there and sit there and sit there.
And for a child, that's torture.
Right. And there was no, like today, where there's commercials and there's other scenes and there's things to watch. There's, like, there's stuff going on.
Let me ask
you. There was nothing. It was just lights on, black screen, and sometimes even the screen, like a lot of times, I remember the screen was closed. Like, yeah, you couldn't even see the
screen.
They
used to have curtains. Do you remember the curtains?
Yeah, I remember the curtains.
Yeah.
And I remember sometimes, like, the curtains wouldn't open, or maybe they would open just, like, to a certain amount, and they wouldn't open all the way.
Yeah.
People would have to go get the manager. But no, so we were just, like, sitting there, like, waiting and waiting and waiting, and I'm like, what movie are we seeing? The Neverending Story? And I'm like, this is more like the Never Starting Story, right? Yeah. So, yeah, that's my dumb story.
I this movie I watched a lot on. I mean, I'm a little bit younger than you, but just by a smidge, I watched it a lot on HBO as a kid. It is a really dark movie for a kid's film,
yeah.
But you know, it's got some interesting puppetry in it. I like it still, but it is super manipulative. It's not the most well constructed story. Right. There's a lot of cool artistry on display in it.
Well, I think both this movie and even like The Karate Kid, you know, teach us, you know, a lot about taking control of our lives and all this kind of stuff, right?
Let's
like in a fantasy kind of way. And I thought that, you know, this was the first like real sort of fantasy movie, you know, I remember going seeing, but like it wasn't, you know, to me, I thought it was more, even though that it was kids in it, it wasn't, it's a real kids movie. You know, this isn't like Bad News Bears where like they're kids being an adult world. It's like kids interacting with kids, and I just then you have this fantasy, you know, sort of aspect of it, and that's why it speaks a lot to our culture today, and even Stranger Things, you know, even
riffs on it now. And to go into Karate Kid for a moment, I mean, yeah, think about how much that movie impacted pop culture,
right?
I mean, have you ever met anyone who didn't try to do the crank kick in a fight at least once?
Right.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, even the term Miyagi-ing,
yeah,
is a verb, you, yeah, know, like, where you're like secretly teaching somebody by telling them to do, you know, like odd jobs.
Yeah.
You know,
or when you meet someone who's really wise, you call them Mr. Miyagi.
Right.
That's a thing in culture now. That's not even, yeah, just pop culture. It's culture.
Mm-hmm.
And what an influential film. And it's still good. But again, to go back to the reframing thing, I got to mention the obvious thing that Daniel LaRusso was not a nice character. He's kind of a jerk in that film.
Yeah, I think in the TV show How I Met Your Mother, you know, it talks about how Barney, you know, thinks of Ralph Macchio as being this like new kid who's provoking all these,
yeah,
kids. You know, he kind of reversed it and looked at like the, yeah, Cobra Kai as, yeah, the guys that are the good guys, and like, here comes this new dude to just like beat up on him, you know, whatever.
Just kind of, I think, in a lot of ways, is the premise of that, of the YouTube sequel series Cobra Kai,
yeah,
where, you know, Johnny's not necessarily a bad guy,
right?
You know, he's had a run of bad luck, but yeah, Karate Kid. I mean, what a fun movie, and it really, it kind of rejuvenated the infatuation people had with martial arts in the 80s. Martial arts were big in the 70s. They kind of died down for a few years, and then Karate Kid re-sparked all that, like. Yeah. Every kid had a headband. Every kid had ninja throwing stars.
Yeah, or, you know, nunchucks.
We were all doing the wax on, wax off thing,
yeah,
at,
right,
home.
Yeah, everybody was like hitting themselves with nunchucks, you know.
Yeah.
Being stupid.
Those are the ones that had the foam padding on,
yeah,
them.
Yeah. I mean, I remember going to like flea markets and stuff and seeing like the cheap throwing stars and stuff.
The weird Asian store that sold like cheap swords and strange pipes.
Yeah, right. And, you know, people would, you know, you talk about like these, you know, secret like Asian, you know, moves that can just like, you know, knock somebody out, you know, like flat or something like that. It's all, you know, it's all part of being growing up and being a kid.
Right before we had the internet, we could just debunk all this stuff immediately. You know?
Right. Yeah. Like, I know a guy that did better. Whatever.
Maybe the crane kick is real. How would I know? I'm a 10-year-old and an idiot.
We skipped over, like, I don't want to skip over, like, I don't know how much too much we want to skip over things. I mean, I don't know how much we can talk about Ghostbusters or, but yeah, I don't think we can skip over Gremlins.
Oh, Gremlins is such a fun movie.
I mean, Gremlins is one of these movies that's like, it's really odd because it kind of crossed genres between like comedy and horror.
It is. There's some real horror scenes in it. Yeah. Right.
Because it gets horror like really fast, especially like the second half.
But did you ever find it scary as a kid? We're talking about nostalgia. Did you ever find it scary as a kid? Because, I mean, when I watch it now, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is an effective horror scene where Billy's mom gets attacked and she puts the gremlin in the blender.
Yeah.
But as a kid, it never occurred to me that I should be scared by it. I don't know why, because it should be terrifying.
Yeah. It was kind of like, I think I was more scared of probably like Poltergeist or something.
Yeah. And not to talk about the Poltergeist, but so I don't know if it was just – because you get introduced into the world of Gremlins by the Mogwai, by Gizmo.
Yeah.
And is that kind of that Spielbergian Amblin quality?
Mm-hmm.
That when you don't even quite, you're so kind of enamored that you don't even quite get that you're supposed to be freaked out by it. Or at least that was my experience as a kid watching it, because Gremlins never scared me as a kid. But when I watched it as an adult, I'm like, this is a really effective little horror movie in places.
It is, but I think like most horror movies, they get to the horror like pretty quickly.
Yeah. Right?
It takes like halfway through the movie to get to like the really bad part. Because you know like bad things are going to happen eventually and things like are very sort of, you know, serious and like sort of leading up, because there's a lot of scenes where you're not following the character. You're following like the Gizmo character. And, you know, like something's like not right.
Yeah.
And because you see things more, you know, from the back perspective that the characters don't see, right?
True.
Like you're getting a bigger glimpse of things from a wider angle. And so there, you know, the serious scenes to me, like the horror scenes, they were really kind of, you know, they're really kind of bad, especially when they start taking over the movie theater and start taking over like the town.
Yeah, but the bar scene is so funny. You got like they're kind of goofy. They got the one wearing the ski mask. He's got the gun pointing there. They're playing cards. It was almost like a Looney Tunes. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but it was like a Looney Tunes cartoon. And I was scared of all that kind of stuff when I was a kid. But for some reason, Gremlins never had that effect on me. It always seemed to kind of – the fun always came through for me on Gremlins.
Right, yeah. And plus, they were small, you know. Yeah. It's not like you had this big thing, you know what I mean? So
true, yeah.
It was just – it was the power and the numbers of all of them.
Yeah, they could drag you down.
Right. But so let's move on. But I mean, part of like Don't Feed Them After Midnight. I mean, that's all part of.
I do want to mention one thing. The movie they watch in the theater is Snow White, and that was the first movie I ever saw in a theater as a kid was Snow White. A little bit of Matt Estrey trivia for you there.
Now, and here's another thing: Gremlins technically was released. It was like around Christmas, so this was summer. It wasn't a re-release, but you know, I think it was already at week 7, so it came out like. During the summer. I mean, both it and Ghostbusters were released the same week. So even though that it technically the time period happens around Christmas.
Yeah, because it's a Christmas film. It's a weird Christmas film, but it is.
Right.
It's plot points that it takes place at Christmas. I guess I thought it wouldn't play well at Christmas with the murder and the carnage and the whatnot. Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, because, well, I mean, they had Die Hard, but anyway.
Die Hard is a Christmas movie, by the way. We're not going to get into that, but we will plant our flag and say that.
Well, Die Hard's not a horror movie, though, either. It's an action movie. It's a little different. All right, so we got The Muppets Take Manhattan.
Now, that's a movie I certainly love.
I mean, all the Muppet movies. I mean, really,
But you got the you got those great scenes in the diner with the rats like skating on the butter and all those like just classic little bits in the Muppet Steak Manhattan.
Yeah, I mean, I think I saw all of them. You know, is this the one where they steal the Hope Diamond? That's not that one. Which one was that one?
That's the Muppet Movie, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. They honestly blur together for me.
I mean, I do remember seeing them in the theater when I was younger.
Yeah.
Because I would have been, you know, in 1984, you know, I would have been like 7, you know, or 8. The Last Starfighter.
No, that's a movie I watched a bunch as a kid.
I think The Last Starfighter is one of these movies that, you know, there's a lot of movies, I think, that influenced Star Wars. You know, a lot of movies that, you know, Lucas had in mind that he sort of borrowed from. You know, he borrowed from, you know, some Westerns. He borrowed from Dune. He borrowed from, you know, other stories and a lot of them. I mean, the list goes on, probably about, you know, a dozen. But there are some movies that, you know, influenced or, you know, made, I guess because sci-fi was like a thing. I mean, it allowed like Star Trek to have like a life and allowed like all these other things to happen and sci-fi to really like take off again.
Star Wars influenced a lot of other movies afterwards. I mean, yeah. Starfighter is one of those movies.
Yeah.
It's a child of the influence of Star Wars.
That's what I was getting at is like this whole sort of dreamy aspect, because I think that it ties in because we have no connection with Star Wars, right? It happened a long time ago, far, far away, you know, a galaxy far, far away. But this is where you're tying in like, oh, if I'm good at this like game, you know, this video game, then like I'm, you know, they may ask me to, you know, play and fight real aliens. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And it's such a wish fulfillment thing that's so perfect for children.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I play video games all the time. I could fly a spaceship.
Right.
Have adventures with aliens.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be cool? And Starfighter, it's such a fun, light movie. And it's early uses of CGI. It's, you know, I remember thinking the CGI was so cool when I was a kid seeing it. You know, never seeing anything that looked like that except for maybe a little bit of Tron,
right? Yeah, and this is I think War Games was 85, so this would have been like a year before like War Games, really. But yeah, you have once again, it's about like a kid. You know, it's like he's just graduating high school, but it's not a kid movie. You know what I mean? It's kind of like this.
It felt adult as a kid watching it.
Right.
Well, you're watching a grown-up movie.
Well, yeah, because I think it has basis in that, like, sort of, you know, heroism, right? Where you have, like, an ordinary person, but he has extraordinary skill, you know what I mean? And he kind of gets chosen for this thing, but you also get to interact with aliens and fly in space, and, you know, there's, like, this whole other world.
And maybe kiss a girl, and that's intriguing for reasons you don't quite understand yet, you know?
Right. But he's just a normal guy who lives in a trailer park.
And that's such a huge wish from a thing when you're a kid.
Yeah.
Think about that.
I mean, and the tie-in to the video games and the video game culture, I mean, was huge. Because all of a sudden, like, we had these huge arcades. Like, in the arcades, it wasn't just, you know, pinball machines. I mean, we were playing Tron, we were playing Pac-Man, we were playing Galaga and Centipede.
I think this was one of the first movies. It was one of the first movies to have video games as a central plot point too.
Yeah,
it's one of the first movies to have that as a thing that motivated the plot.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that to move the plot along for sure. Yeah, because it's like a central part of the theme. It's really really awesome because I think even. Well, I think Cloak and Dagger, 1984, I think. I remember. But anyway.
I can look and see. Bear with me one second. Now I'm curious.
Oh, yeah. Because we talked about Cloak and Dagger on our show, and I should have that.
But that was forever ago. It was 1984.
Yeah, so it was the same year, but I don't know when. But yeah, that was also... You know, that video game being a central plot point. But, yeah, so that, I mean, already directors and writers are starting to see those connections become a thing.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on to the next one. We're only, and look, We're only halfway through this list.
Well, we're not going to talk about that Eddie Murphy Dudley Moore movie, so that's saving us some time.
I've never seen this movie. I've never seen Best Defense. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it got very well, good reviews.
It can't have. I've never heard of it. And, right. And again, I waste my life with this stuff. So.
But I mean, already we've talked about 6 movies that really helped shape our childhood that we saw over and over and over
that are
again.
Ingrained in us,
because we not only saw these at the movie theater, we watched them on HBO, we watched them on TV when they played on TBS and USA.
We pretended to be them and played games around them. Like, we pretended to be the last Starfighter. We all pretended to be the Karate Kid at one point or another.
Yeah, we said the lines, we acted it out with each other, all this kind of stuff. All right, so next movie. Now, this is number 8 on the list for this week, but because that was already, it was at week number 7, so it was already released earlier in the summer, but Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Which is another controversial take. It's my favorite Indiana Jones movie.
I think it's one of my favorite as well.
I mean, I like it. I'm going to say I like it more than Raiders of the Lost Ark, and I for sure like it more than The Last Crusade.
Okay.
And, there are only 3 Indiana Jones movies. There are only 3.
The Crystal Skull doesn't exist.
Because it's Indy at his most pure.
In the Temple of Doom, let's be clear.
Yes. In the Temple of Doom, because Indy's roots are in pulp novels. Uh-huh. And Temple of Doom is super pulpy. It's got evil cults and magic and like sword fights and voodoo and just to me it's the least like sanitized Indiana Jones film. Right. It's super like it's almost a little bit sleazy in places.
Well, I mean I liked it because it didn't. It is really like this kind of like fun house of horrors kind of thing, right? Especially like the intro with all the bugs and then like the room that like squashes them, and it feels almost like that. But one of the things that I really liked about it is it. Number one, you don't really have Nazis in it.
Yes.
Okay, so there. He's
and as
not
I
like,
said, in 2020, we're all really sick of Nazis.
Well, I mean, what I mean by that, and let me be clear, is that he's not going after some sort of prize. It's not like he's like, I really dream about finding this one thing, and then I'm like, oh. No, he goes out on an adventure and then kind of gets caught up in all of it just by being at the wrong place at the wrong time, really. Or really the right place at the right time to help save all the kids or whatever. But save the village. But yeah, you know what I mean. It's just it's an adventure that he finds himself in just by being there.
And it starts with that great musical number and it's got one of the best sidekicks in movie history. One of the few not annoying child sidekicks, Short Round.
Short Round.
One of the greatest movie quotes of all time. No time for love, Dr. Jones. How many times do you use that in your everyday life? I use it a lot, surprisingly.
Or you call him Dr. Jones.
Yeah.
Who was also in, Gremlins, which...
You mean Goonies.
Yeah, he was also in the Goonies, not Gremlins. Yeah, he was also
Gremlins, Goonies. Gremlins on the Brain is what it is. Sorry. Yeah, but Goonies,
Same guy.
Yeah.
Same actor. Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's fantastic.
The scene where they're playing cards and, he accuses Indy of cheating. I like how they have this, they don't explain their backstory, they're just friends, and they imply they've had lots of adventures together in the past.
One of the greatest things I love about the opening scene, the opening scene, because the opening scene, he's like finding that jewel or whatever,
He's in the club,
right?
Yeah.
But then after that, he has to go to the club to like make the deal or whatever.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that Spielberg made the choice to like use that table that like you can spin or whatever, that like Lazy Susan table, because it really is like the tables have turned. I mean? It's like it's literal, but you don't think about it.
Yeah, it's fun, and that opening musical number is great. And that little pun of it being called Club Obi-Wan, which I have to mention.
That's right.
And Obi-Wan
or whatever.
Obi-Wan, But and a little bit of trivia that not a lot of people know, maybe our listeners will know, but Dan Aykroyd is in the scene right after that.
Yes.
Like when they're escaping to the plane, he's the guy who gets Indy on the plane.
Yep.
It's Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
For years, I never noticed him, and I always wondered, where the heck is Dan Aykroyd in this movie? And I got it on Blu-ray, and suddenly I just noticed him. Oh, there he is.
Yeah, he says, like, right this way, Dr. Jones, or something. Yeah,
and it's clearly him. I don't know why I didn't notice it for 20 years.
Right, but you can recognize his voice. So if you can't see him, just watch the movie. And watch for that scene.
And listen. It's right. It's probably 15 minutes into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they had to dub his voice in. It doesn't, because they have, like, the airplane the propellers going. But it's definitely his voice.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's one of my all-time favorite movies.
Yeah, and I love, I just love the whole thing with the... And one of the things I really liked about it is that, you know, I think all of the movies have some sort of, like, mystical, you know, part about it. Like, it's not just the adventure. Like, there's always some sort of, like, supernatural thing that happens. And with that movie, I think that it really played into more of that supernatural, you know, bit of it.
One thing I liked about it was it wasn't Christian spirituality.
Yeah,
it was more to do with Eastern religions and those, because you know Last Crusade is about the Cup of Christ, you know Raiders is about the Ark of the Covenant, and this one thing is a mythology and a belief system that we as you know white boys in a flyover state aren't necessarily that familiar with, which makes it more intriguing to or it did as a kid. Mm-hmm. I was fascinated by the idea of it.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why I think that Crystal Skull, they kind of went after like the Mayans and the aliens and it just didn't really...
There are only three Indiana Jones movies, Ryan.
Okay. I'm trying to make your point for you. All right. Moving on. I mean, I like all three of those movies.
Me too.
Of the movies.
You hear me? I also like the Young Indiana Jones TV series, which we don't...
Oh, yeah. River Phoenix.
River Phoenix.
Yeah. Well, no. River Phoenix played Young Indiana in Last Crusade.
It was Sean Patrick Flannery in the TV show, who went on to be in the Boondock Saints and the Saw movies and a bunch of stuff.
Right.
But that's neither here nor there. We're not talking about those.
I think, wasn't it supposed to be River Phoenix before he died? And then, I don't know.
That probably. If we're going to do a River Phoenix episode eventually. Maybe we'll get to that when we...
I know. Yeah, I mean, I know he was in Sneakers, but he just played such a small part in that, you know? All right, so moving on. Bachelor Party.
That's a fun one.
Now, Tom Hanks, I remember, like... reading an interview with Colin Hanks, okay, his son, and he's with Tom Hanks' like first wife, like not
his
current wife. So, but he talked about like how you know he would go, you know, see Tom, and he would see his dad and go hang out with his dad and all this kind of stuff. And you know, Tom Hanks was, you know, he was in Bachelor Party, he was in, you know, he did the TV show Bosom Buddies, he was in Splash. You know, he did.
It's a very different Tom Hanks than the Tom Hanks we think of now, who's like America's dad.
Well, I mean,
now.
Even after that, he did movies like what was the movie like Money Pit,
the Man with One Red Shoe, Joe versus the Volcano,
right?
The Burbs, friend.
Yeah, the Burbs.
We need it.
Dragnet.
Pep Strebeck.
These were the kind of movies that he was doing, and then. You know, and then all of a sudden he does Philadelphia, and after Philadelphia, it's like, okay,
everyone realizes this guy can act.
This guy can do stuff, and then he wins an Oscar, and then he does Forrest Gump.
Yeah,
and he was like, even Colin Hanks said, you know, after he did Forrest Gump, like things were a lot different.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know, things were a lot more lavish. Like they moved into a bigger house, and you know, had all this stuff. So yeah, so. This movie, but it's still the same Tom Hanks. It's still the same talented guy. I don't think that there's ever a movie that I've ever seen. Oh, he also did Big. We can't forget Big.
Big, yeah.
So, but I don't think there's ever a movie that I have not enjoyed his performance.
Yeah, Tom Hanks, I've never seen a bad Tom Hanks performance. I'm not even sure I've seen a bad Tom Hanks movie.
Yeah. I mean, The Man with One Red Shoe, it's fun, but it's not that great.
But it's still not bad. I wouldn't call it bad.
Yeah, there was also a
movie... I wouldn't call Dragnet bad.
No. There's also a movie that he did with Jackie Gleason.
Oh, yeah. Well, what is that movie?
He also did a movie with, like, Sally Field.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Punchline's bad.
Yeah,
Punchline's bad.
Yeah.
We talked ourselves into proving ourselves wrong right there.
Well, no, but his performance is still great. Sally Field is
good.
Great.
Yeah.
It's just not the greatest, like... well-written or, you know, movie to watch.
But it's early in his career.
Yeah. All right, so moving on. But let's just talk about Bachelor Party. Oh,
yeah,
not just talk about
Tom
Hanks.
We got really sidetracked for a second there.
Yeah, sidetracked. Bachelor Party, I mean, he'd already done Splash at this point, right? So he done Bachelor. I mean, this is, it's, you know, it's not one of his big movies. It's not like, you know, big.
Yeah.
But it's still like, I don't know. It's still like one of his staple, like, movies. It's really fun. I think it's a fun watch movie. I don't know if you've ever went back and watched Bachelor Party.
I've not watched it in a while. I keep thinking that we would do a Tom Hanks episode around this time period again.
Yeah.
Where we do that in The Burbs at some point.
Yeah.
We should do that.
The Burbs is good.
This may be a preview for an upcoming episode because I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks movies that begin with the letter B.
Bachelor Party.
Burbs, comma, the.
Right. Yeah, it's actually kind of weird, but I think it gives you a little bit of a slice of like what it was like in New York City at that time.
I love New York before it was cleaned up.
Yeah.
The New York that only exists in movies now are like that dingy kind of New York where it seems like anything could happen. It wasn't a safe place, but it's going to be a lot of fun if you were tuned into it, you know.
There's a lot of stuff going on in that movie that may not translate well to, you know, 2020.
What's funny is I don't think kids seeing it nowadays would even get that that's actually a real that it was like that.
Mm-hmm.
That New York was that, because New York is so different now.
Right.
I remember I showed some 1980s film to my girlfriend at the time, and she's like, "Why is New York like this? Is this like a science fiction movie?" I'm like, "No, honey. New York was just crappy at one point and kind of dingy and awesome."
Right.
You know,
like the subways that were, you know, messed up with graffiti. I mean, that's how they looked. I mean,
yeah.
It was just like people didn't go in the subway at night. You know, people did get, you know, like mugged. But I mean, I think more the kind of like the debauchery and the drugs and the sex and stuff like that that goes on, you know. But it was, because to me, I think it's a kind of more, you know, adult sort of like, you know, humor, like kind of like Porky's type film.
Yeah.
But like a little more adult, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's also better than Porky's.
It's not nearly as silly. Yeah.
I'd call Bachelor Party a really fun like adult comedy.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, again, I think Bachelor Party and The Burbs coming soon. I like that idea. I really do. Pep Strebeck.
Pep Strebeck. Okay, another great comedy that really, you know, once again that I've seen tons of times, and that we've both seen tons of times, Revenge of the Nerds.
That's a problematic movie in here in the year of our Lord 2020.
Yeah, I know there's non-PC things that happen, but, you know, you still had, I mean, the Lambda fraternity was sort of the fraternity of, you know, class.
Well,
I mean, because you had, you know, a black guy, you had somebody who was, you know, and part of the LGBT, had, you know, the Asian student, you had, you know,
they were accepting
all the nerds.
And
right.
And, you know, as a kid, I felt like an outsider because I like comic books. I like geeky things when I was a kid. And watching that as a kid, now this may sound hokey, but it made me realize that when I grew up, I would still have a chance to have friends and be accepted. That's kind of it's kind of silly to say that about Revenge of the Nerds, but it really did that for me as a kid. I shouldn't have been watching because it's a very adult movie,
right?
But it really gave me hope that, you know, I was going to have a social circle when I was older. I wasn't going to be a lonely nerd as an adult, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's very true. I mean, absolutely, adored these movies. I think the scene with... The one that I think that people talk about the most, though, is the scene with Skolnick when he's with the, you know, with the girl.
Yes, it's inappropriate. Because it was, but again, I'm a big believer in you got to think about movies in the time they were made.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone was trying to condone, you know, that kind of thing.
And it's just kind of funny the way it leads to the story, like, oh, yeah, she was with a nerd. Like, oh, okay, then, you know, whatever. It's just part of the, I think it just makes, you know, it just puts the, you know, a little bit more point over what they were trying to go for, yeah. I think.
And I think it's good to make that point. When you watch old movies, you have to really try to think about the time period when they were made. You can't hold them accountable for your morality in today's world. You can't, because if you do that, every movie becomes problematic.
Because it was made for audiences in 1984.
Yeah, because if you try to hold everything to 2020 standards, every movie falls apart that was made in the 1980s or the 1970s,
yeah,
or even the 1990s for that matter.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Because society changes, and that doesn't mean we throw out art because it changes.
No. But once again, about kids, because, I myself am a nerd.
Yeah.
And
it's got,
I felt like, I'm going to be the guy, I'm going to be these guys when I'm in college, and, so.
And it's got Booger in it, and we know we're very pro Booger here.
I know. It's Charles DeMar.
Charles DeMar.
He's not Booger in my eyes. He's Charles DeMar.
Top hat wearing Charles DeMar.
Yes. All right, so last three movies, or the last four movies, we'll just mention real quick. Conan the Destroyer.
Which is not my favorite Conan movie.
All right.
It's still got some fun stuff in it. It's Arnold getting to do a lot of comedy. So it was one of the first movies that showed that Arnold could be really funny when
right.
he wanted to be.
Right.
Because it's a pretty silly film, and it's got some good stuff in it, but it is not nearly as good as Conan the Barbarian.
Conan the Barbarian. Yeah, so don't get those two movies confused for those of you non-Conan watching people. It's Conan, Conan the Barbarian.
It's basically Conan 1.
Yeah, and that is the greater of the Conan movies.
Yeah.
Conan the Destroyer, kind of funny.
It's not a waste of time. It's just not nearly as good as the first one.
Cannonball Run 2.
The movie that introduced Jackie Chan. One of the movies that really popularized Jackie Chan in the West.
Yeah.
You know, he was a Chinese movie star who came to America to try to do the Bruce Lee thing.
Mm-hmm.
And his only real hit was in Cannonball Run 2.
Right.
And he's really fun in it. But mm-hmm. Cannonball Run, Burt Reynolds, Dom DeLuise, those movies are fun.
Yeah.
And they kind of popularized the idea of outtakes in movies.
Yeah, I mean.
No one did that before those movies.
Yeah. And, Jerry Reed. And, you can't go wrong. I mean, gosh, those guys.
Had Jaws, you know?
Yeah.
And the Cannonball Run movies, if you've never seen them, I recommend, if you want a nice throwback to 80s excess and silliness, Cannonball Run movies come highly recommended for just, like, light, goofy watching when you just want to relax on a Sunday afternoon.
Was Jackie Gleason also in Cannonball Run?
No, you're thinking of Smokey.
I'm thinking of Smokey and the Bandit.
Maybe I've not seen him in a long time.
Oh,
maybe
that's right. Jerry Reed was in Smokey and the Bandit. He was not in Cannonball Run 2.
Everyone was in Cannonball Run 2, so maybe he popped up in it.
I'll have to look that up.
But...
Yeah,
but anyway, I recommend watching those if you haven't seen. I'm probably going to rewatch them myself because, I still miss Burt Reynolds. He passed away a couple of years ago now.
Right.
And really, I still miss him because he was a great movie star.
But those movies are kind of like watching like a really long, they're all sort of caricatures, right?
Yeah.
And it's really kind of like watching that like you would watch Saturday Night Live. But they're all like just snippets, trying to do
it's very episodic. It's like little skits. Silly, it's broad, but it's fun because they're all having a good time. You can tell they're having fun making them,
mm-hmm.
and that's why that fun translates.
Star Trek III: The Search for Spock,
pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, and some people say it's better than Star Trek IV, but to me, once again, Star Trek IV is one of my favorites.
Now, Star Trek IV is better.
Hate me if you want.
Yeah,
I don't care.
Always the even number treks, man. Always the even number treks. Everyone knows that.
Yeah. I mean, it's still, as a Star Trek movie, it's still really great, but yeah. And then Electric Dreams, which I didn't really understand.
It's a movie about AI in 1984. It's a movie I had never heard of. It's about a man in his AI program that fall in love with the same girl.
Okay.
It's got Virginia Madsen in it. I've never seen it. So it's the kind of thing that we'd end up watching for this show at some point, if we do AI movies maybe.
All right. Well, let's quickly go over the movies that did chart for the summer of 1984, but didn't necessarily chart the week between July 20th and July 26th. And the summer is defined as the first Friday in May through Labor Day weekend. So not on this list that we didn't talk about were Purple Rain.
I love Purple Rain.
I mean, it's Prince. It's,
such a good movie. The soundtrack's amazing.
Yeah, the music, the clubs.
Worst Day.
Yeah. Absolutely awesome. Awesome. This movie called Tightrope.
Which is a Clint Eastwood movie.
Okay.
It's basically like a Dirty Harry movie that's not about Dirty Harry.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's what you think it is. You know, it's Eastwood being a cop chasing a bad guy.
Okay. And then I saw this and I was like, wow. This is another movie that I saw several times because, you know, I mean, I played Little League, you know, when I was, when I was younger. You know, I played Little League a little bit after this, you know, movie was released. I didn't play it because of this movie. But it's one of the greatest baseball movies of all time, The Natural.
Oh, The Natural with Robert Redford.
Robert Redford.
So good. That amazing ending.
Yes.
With the shower of the sparks. Oh,
yeah.
So beautiful.
But I mean, the whole intro with the lightning and the tree, and it just like wraps you in. I mean, the intro really is like one of the, you know, the opening scenes, one of the greatest opening scenes of him, you know, making the bat, and really draws you into the whole story. And you really don't even get to the bat until like the end of the story. Like, you know, you gotta go through that whole journey, you know, to get to the end, and the payoff is like huge. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Highly recommended. Robert Redford is someone, for younger listeners who aren't knowledgeable of Robert Redford,
right,
you should go on IMDb, look up his filmography, and watch all of it. He's amazing.
Right. Yeah, I mean, just make sure you're ready for tears at the end, you know?
The Natural, big thumbs up.
The Natural, I mean, and one of my second favorite baseball movies is Field of Dreams, which will also kind of get you teary-eyed at the end as well.
Baseball's America.
Right. Another on this list, Breakin'. Now, not Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo. This is just the original Breakin'.
It led to one of the greatest gags in internet history, which is the Electric Boogaloo joke. But, you know.
Yeah.
Breakdancing's fun. I always like breakdancing in films. Then, honestly, if you've ever seen them, they're pretty fun little. They're trifles. They have no substance. But they're fun little movies.
They're very formulaic.
Yeah.
I mean, they're...
Trust me, if you watch them, if you've never seen them, if you watch them, you won't hate that you watch them.
No, not a bit. Yeah. And they have good music in them, too.
Oh, yeah. Definitely good 80s kind of dance music.
Yeah. Just know that if you watch that movie, that's not exactly how the 80s were, okay? That is the 80s that we were sold, but weren't really there.
No,
remember that.
Not at all like that. No. Yeah, no one dressed like that.
No
back
one
then.
Dressed that flashy. I mean, come on, let's be.
No
real.
One did.
No. Red Dawn.
Wolverines.
I mean, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
This is like the height of like the the Cold War.
I'm just saying we got to do.
Leah Thompson.
I'd almost say let's not talk too much Wolverines. Or else Wolverines. Let's not talk too much about Red Dawn because we got to do Red Dawn.
Okay, true.
Patrick Swayze episode coming in season 2.
Okay,
so we got Tom Hanks with the B movies and Patrick Swayze and Red Dawn and a second film to be determined.
Well, tell people a little bit about Red Dawn. What it's about?
Red Dawn is about the communists invading America and the Wolverines fighting them off.
Wasn't it Eric Stoltz and
Eric Stoltz? I always think of Eric Stoltz as like just the drug dealer in Pulp Fiction. So I've heard him imagining him as anything else nowadays.
Well, he was in Mask.
Yeah, but he didn't look like that in Red Dawn if he was in it.
Some Kind of Wonderful. Maybe I'm thinking of Some Kind of Wonderful, but that wasn't because that was Leah Thompson and Eric Stoltz. Which is funny because, you know, Leah Thompson played Michael J. Fox's mom, and Eric Stoltz was the original, like, Marty McFly in Beverly Hills, or not Beverly, in Back to the Future.
It was C. Thomas Howell and Charlie
Thomas
Sheen.
C. Thomas Howell.
Yeah.
In what, Red Dawn?
Which I never think of C. Thomas Howell as being in anything except for The Hitcher.
And what are you thinking about Patrick Swayze, then?
He's in Red Dawn.
He's in Red Dawn? Yeah. Okay. All right. Maybe I think I've only seen parts of this movie. I don't think I've ever seen it.
Oh, then we're definitely doing Red Dawn then.
I remember it being on HBO, but I think I was too like young to understand the plot points of it all.
Yeah, Red Dawn is cool, man. We're doing Red Dawn.
All right. Moving on the list. Blah, 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 blah. Oh gosh. Oh my gosh. One of the biggest teenage movies. If ever there were a teenage movie in the 80s, 16 Candles.
John Hughes.
John Hughes.
Yeah.
I mean, amazing. If you haven't seen 16 Candles, just go watch. I mean, it is the classic. Like, there's Breakfast Club, and then there's 16 Candles.
Sums up, like, teenage angst and longing so well. And it gives you the happy ending you wanted your teenage years to have, but you never really had.
Mm-hmm.
So good. Yeah, it's so good.
And then another movie that I really liked growing up, Top Secret.
Top Secret. That is just a Val Kilmer. It's a Zucker Brothers film. Zucker Brothers. There we go. Yeah, farcical. It's very Naked Gun-ish. You know, it's lots of visual gags. It's absurd. It's fun. He plays like an Elvis type character who becomes like a spy.
Yeah,
it's fun, especially if you like young Val Kilmer. Like if you're a fan of Tombstone,
mm-hmm.
and you've never seen Top Secret, it's a fun, silly farce.
Yeah.
Highly recommend it.
Yeah, farcical. Yeah, kind of like the Naked Gun movies or Airplane.
I would say
or,
it's better than the Naked Gun movies.
It's one of my favorite like farce kind of movies. I mean, there was you know I Know What You Did. You know, I mean, there was some other ones like
yeah, Scary Movie and the Airplane movies and Naked Gun.
But this is one of my favorite. There's so many funny gags in it.
It works really well. Yeah. It does. It does.
Oh, and what was the one that they did in the 90s? It was, wasn't Top Secret. It was another one that Charlie Sheen was in.
That was scary. You're thinking of Scary Movie?
No, Scary Movie.
Oh, you're Hot Shots.
Hot Shots, yeah.
You're thinking of Hot Shots, Shots. Which I think
is better. I mean, Top Secret is better than Hot Shots.
Oh, yeah. Top Secret is definitely better than Hot Shots, yeah.
And then I'll mention two other movies. Firestarter.
Which is not a bad film. I kind of like Firestarter.
Right. And a movie that we did and that we talked about already, Cloak and Dagger.
The Double Dabney.
I mean, but just think about that. In 1984, that was the summer of 1984. Yeah. Think about how many movies that has helped shape who we are.
How
we
many
think
fun
about,
movies are on that list.
Yeah, how much it shaped the culture, how much that, you know, our audiences already know about those movies.
And you just said it there, man. The culture. That made up you and me, our video culture.
And when I look at the top 1984, I'll just sum up all of this, right? When I just look at the top 1984 domestic gross for the whole year of 1984, there's only like a couple of movies that are not that we didn't talk about, you know, already. Beverly Hills Cop being one of them, but that was released in December. And that was like just a huge, huge hit that we already discussed on one of our episodes.
If you
want
to hear that, go back to our archives on video-culture.com and check out the show archives where we cover Beverly Hills Cop 1 and 2.
Yeah, it's episode.
They are good films.
Yeah, it was episode 20. Beverly Hills Cop, Ghostbusters, Indiana Jones, Gremlins, Karate Kid, Police Academy, Footloose.
Yeah.
Footloose.
Kevin Bacon, Chris Penn.
I mean.
John Lithgow doesn't want us to dance, Ryan. We're going to dance.
Footloose.
We're going to cut.
1984.
We're going to cut Footloose, my friend.
Romancing the Stone.
I really like Romancing the Stone.
Probably
my favorite Michael Douglas movie.
Really?
No problem.
All the Michael Douglas movies?
Not a huge Michael Douglas fan.
Okay.
I know, but I like Romancing the Stone.
It's Falling Down?
That's another conversation for a different day.
Okay. All right.
But yes, I like Romancing the Stone better.
So, I mean, I like his character. His character was quite suave character, you know. Splash? I mean, we talked about, you know, Tom Hanks, but yeah, Splash and Venture Party did come out in the same year.
Yeah, it was a good year for Tom Hanks, for sure.
Amadeus.
Which is an excellent film.
Right? So, and I mean, there's more, like The Terminator and Friday the 13th, The Final Chapter, and Against All Odds, and I'm just looking at the Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
Came out in 1984.
The original?
Yes.
So you think about 84 was a really great year for movies that made a lasting impact.
Yeah. Oh, another farcical movie that I like, Johnny Dangerously.
Johnny Dangerously with Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton playing like a, you know, Chicago mobster. Yeah. And yeah, that's about it. I mean, there's a lot of oh. Sorry, I just looked. The bottom of the list, the last movie on the list, The Razor's Edge.
Razor's Edge. See, it's all interconnected. We covered The Razor's Edge, and in our, again, go to our archives on the website. We covered The Razor's Edge. Always funny how we these unintended little things we end up stumbling across or forgetting about and then seeing how it's all interconnected.
I am done. I am done.
We're drawing diagrams with strings right now, people. It's all interconnected.
I forgot about that. Yeah. That Ghostbusters came out earlier in the summer, and then The Razor's Edge was released like in September.
Because that was the movie he agreed to do for so they would fund The Razor's Edge. And on that note, guys, I hope you enjoy this little palate cleanser as we get ready to introduce season two of our show.
All right. Well, thanks very much for listening, and hopefully you will enjoy what the rest of the movies that we talk about. I'm sure, you know, will not be, maybe not quite nearly as popular. There'll be more movies that you can help discover, that we can help, you know, sort through all the movies that are out.
You've got a little preview of what we're going to do. You know, a little bit of preview of what we're going to do. I will say that coming up for episode 30, we're going to come. Well, is it okay if I spoil this?
Go ahead.
We're going to cover something.
Sell it.
We're going to cover a movie, and it's sort of sequel. Or maybe it's one movie, intent. We're going to talk about a director we've mentioned a lot on the show, but never actually watched one of his films. We're going to talk about Quentin Tarantino and his Kung Fu Spaghetti Western opus, Kill Bill, Volume 1 and 2, for episode 30.
30, yeah. So we got another couple episodes to get there. But
so that's something to look forward to into season 2. We're not going to spoil the rest of it for you. Just something to look forward to. Give you hints of what we're going to go to.
Yeah, check out our upcoming page on our website.
I promise we'll eventually update it. That's mostly my fault.
No, and you can see what the upcoming movies are. So if you want to watch the movies before we actually talk about them, because we will, you know, we don't want to spoil it for anyone.
Again, guys, thank you for joining us on this little reset as we introduce season two of Video Culture.
And I'm Ryan Acri.
And I'm Matthew Estri. Go watch some movies, guys.
Thanks for checking out this episode of Video Culture. You can check us out on Twitter at Video Culture 2.
That's the number 2 for two guys talking about movies like Ryan and myself.
And you can also check us out on Facebook. Just search for Video Culture Podcast.
Also, be sure to stop by our official website, video-culture.com. There we have the entire show archives, as well as articles about film.
Yeah, so check us out. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, come hang out with us, talk movies. Did you like the show? Do you hate the show? Do you like or hate the movies we talked about? Let us know. Come chat with us, and let's all watch movies together.
Worse than it feels, believe me.
Yeah, I hope so. Listen, I never got a chance to thank you.
Oh, no, that was nothing. I'm just sorry about your radio.
Yeah, I'm more sorry about your eye. I mean, I guess you should have just given it to him.
Well, why? It wasn't his, right?
Yeah, it wasn't his.
Yeah, we think alike like already.
You know what else we do alike?
Hey, goodbye,
Justine. Hey, over here.
Oh, I gotta go.
I'll see you.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, you got a name?
Allie, with an I. Hey, what's your name?
Daniel, with an L.
I'll see you later.
Definitely.